Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to welcome you to the City Council meeting for the City of Cedar Hills. Today is Tuesday, February the 16th, 2016. I have 7:01 p.m. I'd like to call our meeting to order. Tonight's invocation will be given by Councilmember Crawley and then our pledge by Councilmember Bailey.
They just barely got here.
Is there a scout that would like to lead us in the pledge?
Yes, please. Be brave.
Go ahead, Brady. Okay, we're gonna have a prayer first, okay. and then we'll have you. Okay.
Dear Father in Heaven, we're thankful that we could gather as city residents and leaders and discuss the business of the city. And please bless us that we can be guided and use wisdom and use courtesy in all of our discussions. And bless us to make decisions that will benefit the city and the residents and all those involved for many years to come. And we say this in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.
Amen.
So when you come up, can you give us your name and then lead us in the pledge?
I'm Braden Johnson.
Braden Johnson.
Will the audience please rise? Please repeat the Pledge of Allegiance with me. Pray again.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Braden. Very good. So next item we need to take care of is the approval of the meeting's agenda. So council members have had a chance to take a look at the agenda. If someone would like to approve it or amend it, then I'll take that now.
I move that we approve the agenda as is.
I have a motion to approve the amendment as is. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Mr. Zappala seconded it. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Next item is public comments. And I have one person that signed up in public comments, two people that are going to be speaking on item number 8. Mr. Cromwell, if you wanted to come forward and you can give public comments now. You have 3 minutes.
Good evening, Council. My name is Ken Cromar, 9870 North Meadow Drive, Cedar Hills, former city councilman, and I'm here tonight to actually get nervous, so I actually thought I'd better write up my comments, and they're as follows. Thanks to those of you who thoughtfully do many good things honorably for the residents of Cedar Hills, my family is grateful. On the sign-up sheet to speak at this microphone in public comment, it reads something to the effect that, would you like to be contacted regarding this item? I mark yes when I've offered public comment, but no one ever calls. For example, if you don't intend to respect me and Cedar Hill Citizens for Responsible Government's petition for redress of grievances read into the record at the last city council meeting and emailed to many of you, then maybe you might want to consider removing that option from the sign-up sheet. New paragraph. Also, at the last city council meeting, I was abused by the mayor, certain current and former city council members, some residents, and ironically a newspaper reporter. This meeting was stopped, and I was singled out for public ridicule in front of a number of Boy Scouts, as a matter of fact, while quietly recording the proceedings from the side of the room, completely out of the way, as you can see right now. And with no one around me and with no disruption whatsoever, because you, Mayor, said that an ordinance had to be at the back of the room. This is not the first time a First Amendment infringement has been attempted by Mayor Gigi. In October, the city managers had to call two police officers to come to the golf committee meeting to protect me from a hostile crowd incited to near riot by a mayor and golf committee chair who refused to protect me and my rights to videotape a public meeting. People were kicking my chair, jumping in front of my camera, and making threatening gestures. No apology from the mayor or city were ever offered. Well, tonight the council will be discussing a change to its ordinance regarding videotaping of public meetings. The current ordinance was illegal, and I believe you should have known it. All of you should have jumped to my defense and protection of my rights because you swore an oath to do so when you took office. Did you even understand what you were doing when you swore an oath to protect and defend the U.S. and Utah constitutions? Some of you have probably not even read it, those documents yet. I hope that you'll at least do better a better job understanding and keeping your sacred marriage vows to your spouse. The vows of fidelity are not dissimilar. Counsel, we have a problem. The general misconception is that any statute passed by legislators bearing the appearance of law constitutes the law of the land or Cedar Hills. The U.S. Constitution is the supreme law of the land, and any statute to be valid must be in agreement. If it is, otherwise it is not law, and it's in violation, as the following Supreme Court references say. All laws which are repugnant to the Constitution are null and void. Marbury versus Madison. Where rights are secured by the Constitution are involved, there can be no rulemaking or legislation which would abrogate them. Miranda versus Arizona. And thirdly, an unconstitutional act is not law. It confers no rights, it imposes no duties, affords no protection, it creates no office, it is legal, it is in legal contemplation as inoperative as though it had never been passed. Norton versus Shelby County. I assume my time is done.
Okay, thank you. You can pick up whatever you want at the next time.
I appreciate your time.
So, Mr. Cromar, you and I don't agree on everything, but you're 100% right on this.
I wonder where my apology is from all the other meetings where I've been abused, particularly by you, Mayor. Is that forthcoming?
I don't think I have abused you, but you are 100% right on this issue.
Thank you.
Okay. Moving on. Next item is, and we'll come back to the public comments for number 8 later on. We're on to our consent agenda. And we have minutes from one meeting, which is February the 2nd, 2016. It's a city council meeting. So, and we also are appointing Matthew Laney to the Beautification, Recreation, Parks and Trails Citizens Advisory Committee. So those are two items. Hopefully someone's read the minutes, is okay with it, and we'll give us a motion on that now.
I move that we approve the consent agenda.
I have a motion to consent to approve the consent agenda. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Mr. Bailey seconded it. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. Moving on to city business. Mr. Bunker, you're first, then we'll go down the row.
Mayor and Council, we have a Timpanogos Special Service District meeting this Thursday night, so I will be attending that, and I can report on that after at our next council meeting. On March 8th, we will be having an emergency management town hall meeting, our annual meeting. It will begin at 7 o'clock p.m., and the focus this year is family preparedness. Want to report on the BYU basketball Cedar Hills night. It was a great success, and we ended up with around 100 participants attending. The next closest city to us, I believe, sold about 30 tickets. So we look forward to this every year, and that was great. It was a great night. Cedar Hills Night with the Utah Jazz is also on March 8th. It's a competing meeting with our emergency management town hall meeting. But if you are headed to the Jazz event that night for Cedar Hills, you can purchase tickets at the city office for $15, and that includes a hot dog and a drink. And we'd love to see you there if you're not at the emergency management town hall meeting. The theater production, our theater group, continues to move forward. They have plans to hold performances next month. Also, if the weather will hold, we plan on opening the golf course next week. Hopefully we have some good weather to get that going. Tomorrow night, Wednesday night, is our soils community class with Diane, and we would love to see everyone show up and give her some support. We have not had that great of attendance at these events, but we are finalizing some plans with Intermountain Farmers for at least two more classes to be taught by them, and I believe those would be on fertilization and lawn care. We do have some classes here at the community center taught by the Utah County Health Department. And the next one is also on March 8th before the emergency management town hall meeting. And that one will be on living with chronic conditions. And that class is limited to 15 people. So if you're interested in more information on that, please contact us at the city and we will give you more. And that information is also on the website. That's all I have.
Okay. Mr. Sapala, you're up next.
So since we last met, I wrote a letter to the Utah County Board of Adjustments regarding American Fork Canyon, outlining some reasons why I felt they could deny Snowbird's application for a conditional use permit to build some ski lifts there due to impacts that I felt they could not mitigate with reasonable conditions. I have not heard anything from the board as far as I can tell. They're not really considering that avenue. They have given 60 days for American Fork and Snowbird to discuss water quality issues to try to see if they can formulate some reasonable conditions they can impose to ensure our water quality is not harmed. The other thing I've done since we last met is we conducted a survey on the commercial zone that we sent to residents via email as well as social media. We received 717 responses, which is a very good response rate. Been working with Jenny to update our city code regarding our commercial zone. We'll discuss a draft tonight and continue to work on that in the rest of the month.
Anything else?
Nope, that's it.
Okay, Mrs. Reese, you're up next.
I don't have any updates.
Okay, thank you. We'll have a finance committee meeting, I believe it's tomorrow afternoon, and Thursday morning there is a Lone Peak Public Safety Board meeting. I will report back on both of those meetings. That's it. Mr. Crawley.
Nothing new to report today.
Mr. Bailey.
Last meeting, I reported that the Arts Committee is planning on an event on the 20th. I believe that's been canceled.
I believe you're right.
Okay.
Thank you. Anything else?
Nope.
Okay. Thank you. Moving on then, item number 8, which is an action item on an ordinance amending Title I, Chapter 5, relating to non-flash still photography and video recording the public meetings. I have Mr. Cromar first, and then Mrs. Cromar. So if you want to come up again.
I'll invite Barbara to go first, and we'll just follow her.
Okay, Mrs. Cromar, if you'd like to go first. You have 3 minutes. If you could state your name and address, please.
Barbara Cromar, 9870 North Meadow Drive. Is that good? At the last council meeting, the mayor disrupted his own meeting to pretend to take offense and to claim that his council meeting was being disrupted because Ken was videotaping at the side of the room rather than at the back where the city ordinance claimed he had to be. You can't see or hear well the people speaking at this microphone from the back of this room. All you get is the back of heads and bad acoustics. At the side, Ken was able to see and hear the proceeding better and has done so regularly from that position while not interrupting anyone. In fact, to his knowledge, he has never disrupted a public meeting. The only disruptions relating to Ken have been individuals who have chosen to take or pretend offense, demanded they not be videotaped, or protested Ken's disobedience to the unlawful ordinance. This is not new. Ken has informed you numerous times, as have other professional TV cameramen, that the back of the room is not conducive to documenting a public meeting. People often ignorantly parrot that we're a democracy. They are wrong. We are a constitutional republic. There is a difference. A huge difference. Intelligent students of history know that the founders declared that democracies were dangerous and undesirable, which is why they created a republic, if you can keep it, as Ben Franklin said. Do you remember? And to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God? Tonight, all of you said those words in unison with your hand over your heart at the beginning of this meeting when we stood and said the Pledge of Allegiance. Remember? Your intent tonight to revise and tweak around the edges an ordinance that is already repugnant to the U.S. Constitutional and Utah Open and Public Meetings Law is ill-advised, presumably by the mayor. In other words, in Ken's opinion and my opinion, putting lipstick on this pig doesn't make it any less porky or enforceable. One of the ordinance revisions proposes to instruct cameramen they must record on the side of the room. What happens if he wants to record from the back for some reason? Would you then threaten to have Lieutenant Lilliard remove him again or arrest him? The only thing you actually have authority to tell us is, or can, is, yes, Mr. Cromar, you can record in any orderly manner, as I, as a city official, will do all in my power to protect your constitutionally guaranteed First Amendment right. In fact, Mr. Cromar, I will challenge any one of my colleagues who tries to make any law abridging the freedom of speech, infringement on the freedom of the press, interfering with the right of peaceably assembly, or prohibiting the petitioning for a governmental redress of grievances. And additionally, yes, Mr. Cromer, you can videotape any public meeting in an orderly manner, and I will do all in my ability to protect your rights under the Utah State Open and Public Meetings Law, which says all or any part of an open meeting may be independently recorded by any person in attendance if the recording does not interfere with the conduct of the meeting. Utah Code, Section 53-4-2035. Monitored means all of the public statements of each member of the public body who is participating in a meeting to record the proceedings of a meeting that can be used to review the proceedings of the meeting.
Thank you very much. Yep.
Do you really need any more in an ordinance than what's already been in the U.S. and state constitution or code? No, I don't think so. Actually, I do have a suggestion for the ordinance in consideration. While you don't have authority to weaken, dilute, impede, abridge, infringe, or interfere with my rights, you can make law that ensures more access to public meetings and impose harsh penalties to ensure my rights stop being abused. This could include creating misdemeanor infractions or immediate removal from office via a majority vote of the council, the mayor, or any city official who attempts to infringe on anyone's First Amendment rights. That would be a great addition. That would be doing your job as you swore you would do. Have you heard the adage, it's the nature and disposition of almost all men once given a little power and authority as they suppose to immediately begin to exercise unrighteous dominion over others? I know me and my family have certainly felt abused and endangered by this man, the mayor. His numerous falsehoods and fabrications promoted and created using taxpayer money to malign and publicly harm my family. I'm aware that many city employees have also felt his abuse and attempted usurpation of power. May I respectfully suggest you table this agenda item tonight and allow the city attorney time to start a new proposed ordinance, if any ordinance is needed at all, or better yet, create an ordinance adopting state code already in place, but with the addition of penalties including possible removal from office. Maybe I should just encourage you to do me the favor of passing this ordinance tonight and give me the ammunition I need for a video to help me in my next Boy Scout merit badge instruction on citizenship in the community, showing how people abuse their power, starring all of you. Oh, and by the way, you can say you don't want to be recorded at a public meeting as the current ordinance reads, but because this is an open and public city council meeting under Utah State Code and the First Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, your protestations don't matter to me or to anyone else. If this upsets Mayor Gigi and he really doesn't want to be videotaped at a public meeting, he can simply resign his position as the mayor of Cedar Hills and then his wish will be granted. I would be happy to see his wish granted. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Okay, council. So now we have item number 8, which is an action item on this ordinance. Hopefully you've had a chance to take a look at that. And I'm sure that this ordinance had well-intended good thought to it, but there's parts of it that are wrong. And Mr. Cromer is right about what he's saying about his ability to have his camera in certain areas and not be infringed. So, okay. Any thoughts from council on this?
So we spoke about this during work session. You had revised one paragraph.
Yes. Before I get to that, I would like to pose a question to Mr. Shaw regarding the nature of this kind of ordinance. It's my understanding that certain rights that are guaranteed in the Constitution are not necessarily unlimited rights. For example, you cannot yell fire in a crowded theater is the classic example. So I want to confirm with you that any restrictions we put in place would need to meet that kind of a test.
Yeah, that's right. Excuse me. The Constitution guarantees rights to all of us as citizens, but they're not unfettered. The Supreme Court has issued rulings from time to time that place limitations on those. Yelling fire in a crowded theater is a great example. Do you have the right of free speech to yell fire? Yes. Do you have the right of free speech to yell fire in a crowded theater such that you cause public alarm? No. And so what is the authority of the council is your fundamental question. And that is that you can place time and manner restrictions upon the right of free speech and the right of assembly and the right of the press to the extent that they support the public health, safety, and welfare of the city. So if there's a serious health concern for example, if there were a noxious gas emission and people were gathering around inside the gas cloud, you could impose an immediate emergency restriction on the right of freedom of assembly to ensure that people don't die. Now that might be an extreme example, but it's a good example nonetheless. And so to the extent that you want to keep this ordinance in place, and it's an ordinance that's been on the books for some time, that's what you need to take into consideration. Are you restricting something that relates to public health, safety, welfare, in a time and manner that is reasonable and that is the least restrictive means possible to accomplish the task?
Great. So thank you for that. I have a couple of changes to propose for the ordinance as it's been presented to us.
Okay.
So referring to the version that was provided to us, there is a section D, and there is a that first section right after the D. The proposed change that I have says non-flash still photography and video recording permitted, restrictions. Non-flash still photography and video recording shall be permitted, provided the public health, safety, and welfare is preserved according to the provisions of this section.
This is what section? Are you
this doing? Is right by the D.
And you're taking out one.
So I'll read it again. No, not taking out one.
Okay. You're in section B.
But this is the first change in section D.
D.
Says non-flash still photography and video recording permitted, restrictions. Non-flash still photography and video recording shall be permitted, provided the public health, safety, and welfare is preserved according to the provisions of this section.
Okay.
Section 1 is stricken entirely to be replaced with the following wording. All non-flash still cameras and video recorders shall be located at the rear of the room or to the sides of the room. Camera placement shall ensure that no member of the public is blocked from viewing the meeting. To protect public safety, no cameras, tripods, or crews may be permitted in any exit, pathway, or aisle, and cords may not be run across pathways, aisles, or exits unless permitted by the public body.
I'm assuming that you've added that in order to preserve the public safety. Right?
That's right.
Okay. Any other
then
comments?
I'd like to ask...
What's that?
Then I'd like to ask Mr. Shaw about D2. I'd like to clarify whether this is a legal provision, which says no photography or video recording of materials, photographing or video recording of materials on desks or in possessions of a person is not allowed. It would strike me as a little bit restrictive.
That might be able to be said more artfully. And I think I don't know what the original intent was, but it seems to me that it would be reasonable to state instead that there shall be no recording of any protected documents under grandma, which likely would include notes and drafts and things of that nature.
Anything else you want to add to that, Daniel?
So the wording there is photography of or video recording of materials that are considered preserved or considered
that are not I would say it this way, that are not public under grandma.
Okay.
I'm just wondering why we need our own code with this. Isn't state code sufficient to protect us and keep our public safe and cover everything we need?
Yeah. So state code says that recordings are permissible. so long as they do not interfere with the meeting or are not disorderly. Right. To the extent you want to further define what it means to be disorderly or to interfere with the meeting, that's where you need to be narrow in your construction and where it needs to be the least restrictive means possible to accomplish the task.
Okay. I'm just wondering if we really need this as a city.
I know you missed work session, but one of the things we talked about was that
there
have been times... Oh, maybe were you here for this discussion? Mm-hmm. There have been times where cameras have been in the front row and the people right behind them feel like they can't see what's going on. We're not elevated above the crowd, and so I think having some areas that are meant for cameras... I also like the idea of it, not having cords that people can trip on, just as a protection to the to our residents here in attendance. But I don't think that anyone's vision of the meetings or the proceedings should be blocked.
Okay. Well, we have a cord right here going right down the aisle, and so I'm just thinking it. I'd be in favor of just scratching the code entirely because I think the state code probably is sufficient for us. But that's my opinion.
And I'm assuming, David Shaw, you've read through all of this.
I have.
Okay.
So, Mr. Crowley, are you saying scrap it and put the state code in front of it?
Just say we follow the state code.
So, have you read the state code?
No, I just know what he's told me right here.
So, you're saying to use the state code, but you haven't read it?
I haven't read it in full, but I'm sure it protects us pretty good.
Okay.
So, I'll make a motion.
Go ahead.
I move that we approve Ordinance 2-16-2016A, an ordinance amending Chapter 1-5-7 of the City of Cedar Hills Municipal Code relating to non-flash still photography and video recording of public meetings with the changes that Council Member Zappala read.
Okay. I have a motion on this action item. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Mr. Zappala has seconded it. We'll need a roll call vote. So... we'll start from my left. Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mr. Crowley.
Nay.
Mr. Bailey.
Nay.
Two nays, three ayes. Ayes have it. Thank you very much. Motion passes. Moving on to item number 9, which is also an action item on a resolution adopting the municipal wastewater planning program. Mr. Bunker, you're presenting.
Chandler, is it this mic you want up?
I think just the general volume.
Is that better? Can you hear any better?
Yeah, because Council Member Reese is not picking up the microphone.
Oh, okay. Mayor and Council, before you have the Municipal Wastewater Annual Report that the city prepares and submits to the Department of Environmental Quality. You can see in the report the evaluation criteria that we go through for operation and maintenance, capital improvements, and general questions regarding the wastewater system. In this report that's submitted to the state, they ask several questions, and if the answer is negative in nature, you are assigned points. So the goal of this report is like golf. You don't want points. You don't want strokes. You can see in the report, we do have some areas where we did receive points. Under the operation and maintenance section, there is a mistake on the total there. The question, has a dedicated sinking fund been established to provide for repair and replacement costs? That answer should be no, so there should be 25 points there. And then, is the repair and replacement sinking fund adequate to meet anticipated needs? Obviously, if we don't have one, then it's not doing that, so the point total would be 25 there. The total for that section is 50, which is correct on the report. Just wanted to point that out.
David, could you take just a moment to clarify why we don't have a sinking fund and why the state wants us and yet we don't have one?
Yeah, so a sinking fund is like, it's a fund that we would not have to borrow in order to replace our entire system. So we would put money away in advance for all repairs and all replacement. And that is a difficult That's a difficult thing for most cities to do in for their infrastructure. In fact, down at the Timpanogos Special Service District, we're grappling with that ourselves. Do we want to make rates high enough that in 20 years when the plant needs to be replaced, we have all the cash we need? Or is the philosophy that we will bond for that replacement when that time comes? Or a mixture of those two things? And so that's something that we can talk about, definitely. Right now, our rate structure isn't a full replacement of every line in the city. We do a capital improvement plan. We have a capital facilities update that we perform, and we'll talk about that tonight as well. So we do try to plan ahead. We try to anticipate the life cycle of our system, and we try to anticipate how we will fund that. But we don't have a dedicated sinking fund for that.
Right. So if we wanted one, wouldn't that mean that we would need to both be accumulating money to pay for ongoing repairs since we don't have the sinking fund yet, plus extra to put into the sinking fund for future repairs? And so current rates would be really, really high if we wanted to meet that requirement.
It would be extremely high.
Guideline, not even a requirement.
Right. And so it's not just repair, it's full replacement.
Yeah.
And so that's a difficult fee to look at and to anticipate for. So most communities, most cities do a capital improvement plan. They try to look forward, try and anticipate those items that they're going to have to repair in the next 5 to 10 years, sometimes up to 20, and then take care of those issues.
Do you know of any cities that do?
That have a full sinking fund? I'm unaware of any city that fully funds depreciation entirely. I don't know of a city who does that.
I would imagine you'd have to have your rates up pretty high.
It would have to be extremely high, yeah, because these depreciation funds, you can't use restricted funds, so there would be no impact fee funds that could be applied because it's full-on replacement. It's O&M, operation and maintenance, so you can't use a restricted fund for that. It would have to be unrestricted. So that's... In that section, we did have a few points there. In section 2, capital improvements, again, it asks about sinking fund. Again, we don't have a sinking fund for all of our capital. So we scored a 75 on that section, which is actually not a bad score. There are communities that get a lot worse than that. In the next section, where our sewer management program is outlined, we go through our system age. Our city started in 1977. We have sewer lines that are starting to get 30, years old plus. We had no sanitary sewer overflows in our city, which is fantastic. We had no sewer come up out of manholes anywhere in the city. We've had that in the past, but we did not this last year. And typically those are caused by backups in the sewer system. And so if you have those, you must report them to the state.
So can I ask you a question on this section as well while
yep.
we're there? So is 33 years where you would like that to be? Would you like that to be lower? At what point do you get worried and say, gee, we gotta get on top of that issue?
I'm not so concerned about the 33-year part per se. Some of the pipe systems that are in the ground, especially if it was, good pipe, can be 50 years old, 60, 70. We don't know how long some of our good DR18 PVC pipe is going to last. It could last a lot longer than that. It could have a 50-year design life. The more critical thing that I look at is capacity of the system and the condition of the pipe inside. So as we video the pipe, if there's cracks, if there's leaking, infiltration, those kinds of things are bad for the system and cost us money. And so I look more at that than just the sheer age of it.
Okay. So I wasn't aware that you actually video the pipes regularly to inspect them.
Yeah. Now, going on in the report, we actually do have a sewer system management plan. This is actually in part 6. It's called SSMP evaluation, which stands for Sewer System Management Plan. We did adopt a management plan in 2013, and so we are working on that. But coming up, we will be required to do what's called a System Evaluation and Capacity Assurance Plan, CCAP. The CCAP basically requires the city to go in and look at every single line and say, what is the capacity of it? Where are you in your capacity of these lines? And what do your pipelines look like? So we will be required to submit that report. And I want to say that that deadline is by, if I remember right, by August or September of this year. So we will be performing that
September 30th
plan.
This year.
September 30th, yeah. We will be doing that plan this year. And that will be a big effort. That will cost a little bit of money to complete that plan.
I'm envisioning a capacity test where you flush all the toilets in the city all at once. I'm assuming it's different than that.
It's a little different than that. But actually, your peak demand on your sewer system is in the morning. Everybody gets up, showers, everybody's getting breakfast, everybody's going, and then they're flushing their toilets and turning on their showers. Everything's hitting the sewer. And it depends on where in the system you are, because there's a lag time from your upper end users, say at the top of the Cedars, clear down to the end of the city. We have three outfall locations where we meter, and they're all in the south end of the city. And so that's where all the sewer kind of flows downhill.
And so that's where you monitor to make sure things are satisfactory.
So the biggest issues are those outfall lines and if those are at capacity. Most of the, I mean, our minimum size sewer line is 8-inch in a residential subdivision. Well, a subdivision, a cul-de-sac, for instance, that had 10 homes on it, it'll never hit capacity. Unless there's an issue like a backup or some kind of a clog, then it would just surcharge and we would have to go take care of that. But it would hold plenty. But the issue is where everything starts to come into the outfall line before it exits the city, that's where you have the most demand on your system.
So two questions then. Is there a way to monitor for those backlogs to make sure that clogs are not happening in the system?
Yes. So in our sewer management plan, our plan is to TV and open up manholes on a third of the city every year. So every 3 years, we're looking at the system. So we want a visual inspection on every line in the city every 3 years.
That's great.
So,
and then if you do a capacity analysis, which we're planning to do later this year, and you find out that there's an issue, then that would indicate, hey, we need to upsize a pipe.
That's right.
At some point.
That's right.
Okay.
So that is the evaluation that we will be looking at. Trying to think if there's any other questions that you might have.
No.
So this would be approved by resolution, and then we would send a copy of that resolution to the state, letting them know that we have addressed this. And again, this is an annual report that we send, so we'll have to do this again next year.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Brunkers. Any questions from the council to Mr. Brunker? Not?
Can I make a motion?
Please do.
I move that we approve Resolution 2-16-2016A, a resolution adopting the 2015 Municipal Wastewater Planning Program. Does that need to say 2016?
Yes,
that 2015. Okay.
Yep.
So adopting the 2015 Municipal Wastewater Planning Program.
Okay. I have a motion on item number 9. Is there a second?
I'll second.
Mr. Crawley seconded. Any further discussion? Let's have a vote. Starting with Mr. Bailey.
Aye.
Mr. Crawley.
Aye.
Mr. Geddes.
Aye.
Mrs. Reese.
Aye.
Mr. Zappala.
Aye.
Motion passes unanimously. Thank you very much. Next item is a discussion item only. This is on FY17 Capital Projects Fund and Motor Pool Fund. I think Mr. Goodwin is presenting first.
Mayor and Council, we wanted to update you on the capital projects plan for this current year and also for the upcoming year as well. Mr. Mucker's passing out what was found in our current budget document in the Capital Projects Fund. We wanted to add a couple of things. We wanted to bring up a couple of things tonight as well that have staff's been discussing and we've had discussions with the council as well. So first of all, we wanted to give a quick update on Bay Hill Park. As many of you know, that we've sent that off to Bowen and Collins for engineering. The timeline that we received from them right now currently is that the final plans will be ready for review by the end of March. We can possibly begin the bidding process in April and hopefully landscape installed in the fall and groundbreaking in September. So that's kind of a quick update on where we are with that. That is on the Capital Projects Fund or the Capital Projects Plan for this year. You can see that in that packet that just got passed out. Second, as you are well aware, the city office building is was originally built, designed for capacity of the Public Works Department. It was never intended to be the main city office. However, in June of 2012, it did become the main city office, and as a result, the building quickly reached capacity, not only in office space, but in parking spaces. Areas that were once dedicated to the Public Works Department for hosting equipment, staging equipment, became staff parking, and as we've added a few more part-time positions, parking has become somewhat at a premium for staff. If there happens to be a full day where the staff is mostly all there and there happens to be some sort of conference or a meeting, the parking lot can quickly get filled up. There's an aerial shot there, and it doesn't do it justice, but you can kind of turn back to that. I think it's on the last page of that document we just passed out. It's an aerial shot of the backside of the current city building and the south yard area. You can see there a number of things after speaking with D. Howard today. Like we said, staff parking exceeds levels projected for the city office building. The original design for the building was only meant to include Public Works Department staffing needs, and the staff is parking in the north yard where the Public Works used to host some equipment and which displaced the Public Works from the equipment in the north yard and pushed them to the south yard. As staffing levels have increased and they're higher throughout the day, there's minimal parking for residents and other visitors to the city building. What we're proposing is an extended yard on the south, which would allow for Public Works to continue to stage the material that they need for projects away from staff parking area. We've had issues in the past where staff has actually backed up into other staff's cars in trailer, attaching trailers or using the equipment in this south yard. You can see it looks from this area, it looks like a very wide open spot, but if you're trying to attach a big trailer to a truck and back that out there, it's not a lot of room for error, especially backing up into the salt shed, that square kind of in the bottom third of the page. This would allow for increased visibility, mobility, and access to the salt shed. I would allow for increased storage of Public Works equipment and staging of material that currently they're storing off-site that they could have stored right there and have picked up on the city's property there. So that's something that we would ask be considered to be put into the Capital Projects Fund. Jeff Mogg, Public Works Director, estimates that as per bid, the extension of the south yard fence line there in those dimensions as passed out would cost about $14,000. The other project that has come before this
25 on here, is that?
That was this first number.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. The email I received just said it was 14,000.
Is that relatively flat or does that go off?
It would need a little bit of grading, not much though, I don't believe.
So does that bid include the grading and
do you know that, David? I think they were going to do most of the work themselves and install the fence. No, it wouldn't be paved.
We wouldn't pay it.
Road pave. We would do all that work ourselves. So we'd like to get that done soon. So the other project that's not
off of it if you need dirt, I have some.
The other project that has come before the City Council that staff wanted to bring up again tonight was the issue of the golf course driving range netting. We've had residents come into the city offices and before the council and complain about the inadequacies of the current golf course net. We've proposed a number of options ranging from hosting surveillance equipment to increase staffing to monitor the use of the driving range to actual fit extending the poles another 20 feet on some of those areas. We wanted to just bring that up again tonight, not really hash it out tonight, but to just put it on your minds that, so that that is a project that would need to be added to the capital improvements plan if this council felt like they were so inclined. As far as projects this year, we have the golf course maintenance facility, and this one's kind of been bounced around quite a bit this last year, but we have had good news in the sense that the city does have a conditional use permit for the land that the city owns, that it's down near the debris basin. So we're evaluating a project down there that will be hopefully cheaper than what we were originally proposing. So that's still in the works, the planning on that. So that's kind of gone back to the drawing board a little bit.
Has there been any further discussion with Highland on sharing a building?
A little bit. David, do you want to take that one?
Yeah, I spoke with the city manager, Nathan Crane, at Highland City, and at this point, they're not moving forward to share a building. They're looking at another location for their needs.
So the other projects in this year, and this project's been on the capital improvements plan for years upon years, is the Deerfield Park land purchase and development, which we've discussed. And the other one is the Canyon Road sidewalk. Now, the Canyon Road sidewalk, the original the cost of the project was $15,000. After evaluating the project, the cost of the retaining wall gives this, it's no longer $15,000. Do you know what the actual estimate on that is, David?
To go the original direction that we were talking, I believe that number was $45,000. Charles?
It was over $100,000 for
the retaining wall. Yeah, I recall it was a lot. So the city was evaluating some other options that were possibly cheaper, where we could save some money but still accomplish the same end. So the staff is still evaluating that one. Anything else you want to add to that?
We did. We made application with Mountain Land Association of Governments to the TAC committee to do a light on Cedar Hills Drive and Canyon Road, and possibly take pedestrians across Canyon Road at that point. We're still working through that process.
And finally, the second to last page there is a list. It's just a typed up sheet. It's an asset management list. The city's currently working on putting together an asset management plan where items that are not in the capital improvements plan, and these include the equipment, the generators, the snow removal equipment, most of the facilities that are city-owned facilities, parks and restrooms, all of the equipment that's in these facilities all this equipment needs to be replaced at some point, whether it's the public works equipment. You can see the year that these various pieces of equipment were purchased and the estimated year that they'll need to be replaced, and also an estimated cost. So you can see that the city is working on developing an asset management plan to add these into the capital project. It's not a capital project, but a capital asset that the city would need to account for in the future. So these are some items that, as time goes on, will need to be replaced. You can see that some of them are in the next fiscal year, whether it's the PG irrigation ditch piping, the arborist study, or items that go further out where the upper booster generator could be out to 2034. So it's a long-range asset management plan that the Public Works Department's working on putting together. Are there any questions on the capital improvements plan? Charles is going to go over the actual funding and account balances with you, but if there's any questions that I can answer at this time, I'd be happy to.
Thank you, Chandler. One question I have on the sidewalk. So it's going to go down in front of the city office building. Where does it end at the north? Is it going to end at the city office building?
No. The idea was to attach it to the north where the trail is.
So up on the hill.
Up on the hill. The problem is there that if you look, there's the curb gutter, and then it immediately begins into a slope.
Right.
So if you're going to cut back, you need to retain that. So the reason that such a high cost isn't the sidewalk, it's the retaining wall to have the sidewalk. So that was just the estimate. So we're looking at some other options, possibly.
Because there's sidewalk across the street from there, correct?
Okay. Correct. Yep. But there really should be a way that people can walk to the city building. So,
okay.
But that's the idea, that there should probably be a sidewalk. We required the Lake Shore Trails development to have a sidewalk out there. So we're just looking at all of our options and making sure.
But we could end it just instead of building the retaining wall and all that. We could just end it so that they can go up the.
We could, but like I said, we haven't made any final decisions about here's what staff recommends. There's still a number of items that we need to look at, whether it's accessing it through a trail, the Bonneville shoreline behind the building, or some other way.
So, thank you.
We'll come back to the council with more information when we have it. Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, Chandler. I think you covered a lot of stuff. So, okay, so, some of the other items that weren't brought up with Chandler that Jeff also requested were street lights upgraded with LED improvements, and we would take advantage of one-third of the funding for that would come from Rocky Mountain's rebate programs. That's the estimate, and then we would get ongoing savings from using the LED lights. I'm not. Another thing is Heritage Park has a couple of tricky things about its amphitheater. One is the electrical cords that cross the stream to go to the stage. There needs to be a way to make that safer, and also just access to the amphitheater. So that is another item that was brought up by Public Works to improve the safety there. Tree replacement plan, where we would hire an arborist to give us a long-term plan of what trees we should be removing and what trees we should be planning to replace those trees and for the whole city. And then this was brought up last year, roundabout improvements for Cedar Hills Drive. Also, this community center flooring replacement, because it's laminate, cannot be sanded. So eventually need to be will replaced with something else, since it can't be maintained other than, I guess, what they're doing right now. So
are we looking at replacing that with something that will last longer than 4 years?
I would recommend that. We've talked about hardwood flooring or tile. You'd probably have to go right on top of what's here because it's glued down to the floor.
So I looked at it last week with Mr. Mogg kind of in detail. Personally, I don't see any problem with it. I think it looks better as it ages and gets beat up, and I just think it looks good. It doesn't have to be pristine, in my opinion.
Yeah.
That's my opinion. But we can discuss it.
Yeah, so.
Appreciate your opinion.
I was confused because it looks wonderful.
It is a hand scraped floor, so it's been made to look old.
Yeah.
So
what happens is the finish on it is wearing off and getting damaged from salt, dirt, stilettos, everything that hits it. And so our maintenance crews are spending a lot of time trying to make it. It looks good tonight. I mean, I look at it and I think, hey, this looks fine. But I know they work really, really hard to keep it like that. And over time, it's going to get worse and worse. And so you'll notice there will be a sheen or a glare. It'll look dirty with the slightest bit of use. And so that's what we're concerned about, is as this floor gets worn down, there's really nothing to – we really can't sand it and put a new finish on the top. So – now downstairs in the area where karate was tonight.
Yeah, that's a sanded place.
Yeah, we have actually refinished that floor already.
We and recoat it once a year.
Yeah, we put that new finish, that new lacquer on top, and we can make that floor down there last a long time just by some simple maintenance. This floor is another issue. So, but you're right, it looks good tonight, but it takes a lot of effort to make this, especially in the wintertime. It's horrendous.
So, appreciate that.
But and again, it's just that surface. It's just that finish on top.
The aluminum oxide, when it wears off, that's when we're in trouble.
So let me ask you a quick question.
Yeah.
On the asset management plan, which was just gone over, shows an ATV plow. Is that just the plow, or is that an ATV and the plow? Anybody know?
ATV and a plow?
It's both.
What's
that?
It's an ATV and a plow attachment. It's for plowing the city's trails.
So, but it's not just the plow. It's the ATV and the plow.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
For $10,000, it's got to include that.
Better include it. Yeah. I just bought a plow for $500.
Okay. Okay.
So can you just clarify? You said this floor, you'd have to put a new one on top of it?
So this laminate is glued to the subfloor.
Uh-huh.
So it would destroy... it'd be very labor-intensive, one, to try to take it off. And so it's cheaper probably to put, like, something over the top of
it. Is that normal, Mike?
I mean, you never know. Sometimes they come off easy and sometimes they don't. I have no idea. I mean, it's... If you put it over the top of it, you create a lot of problems because now you create higher levels that, you know, you have to make maybe cut those,
change the doors,
cut all your thresholds, or put transitions on your thresholds.
So,
but, I don't know. I mean, it's probably glued and nailed, is what my guess is. I mean, it's put in with a nail gun on the edges. So,
yeah, I don't.
I mean, you might have to take the whole subfloor off if it rips it off.
I'm writing city code for free. Can't you replace a floor for free?
Subfloor?
I said I'm writing city code for free. Can't you replace a floor for free?
He's volunteering
the services, Mike. Yeah. Well, you know, the aluminum oxide finish on this generally has about a 10-year life, is what they say. In a commercial setting, it's going to be less.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure that if we do decide, I know this will come back to us when we have bids and such, that we, because this floor's not even 4 years old yet, we gotta do something that will last longer than that.
Yeah.
Yes.
And there's absolutely no way to refinish it. I mean, we live in like a tech age. There's nobody's come out and figured out some special formula yet.
Not for laminate.
Wow.
We approached several contractors to give us a price, and they all said, I'm unwilling to do that.
Trouble is, with that finish on there, nothing will adhere to it.
You need to get 3M on the ball.
Yeah, probably. Figure that out. Get rich.
Yeah, right?
So, yeah, I think, I don't know. Some people it looks good, some people it doesn't. But when it starts to go, we just need to make sure we have funding to replace it. When it does go and you're like, hey, this doesn't look good anymore, we can't just... So anyway, that's going to be expensive. I mean, starting from scratch would have been expensive enough, but tearing it out will probably be as expensive. I don't know, it might be more than actually putting it down.
Yeah, because you got the removal as well.
Then we've also had some discussion on aquatic facilities, which I think the council's working on. There's no funding for that right now. So the breakdown on Bay Hill Park right now is Bowen and Collins, one of their plans was estimated at $446,000. And $274,000 of that was going to be funded with unrestricted fund balance, $80,000 of that with care tax revenues, $80,000 with park development impact fees, and about $11,000 with Utah County track grants. So when those bids come in, that will need to be adjusted, but until then, that's our best estimate we have.
Can I ask a question? Why couldn't we use the impact fees from that we've talked about earlier that have been sitting around because of the legal issues? Is there any reason why we couldn't use all of those impact fees for this park?
Yeah, those are land acquisition. Purchase acquisition
oh,
type
okay.
fees.
Gotcha.
Yeah. Good question.
Charles, I'm sorry. The Bay Hill Park here, it says 235. Is that right?
That was the old number. So that needs to be updated.
Because we're up over 400,000 now, right?
Yeah. Yeah, when we got the plans in, there was a few different options. Originally, the original engineers from civil engineering was much lower. We talked about golf maintenance building nuts, all to be funded with unrestricted fund balance, public works fence extension, talked about. Go ahead.
On that, so this, you're talking about using our labor for most of that. Is that what they're thinking?
On which, again?
This is a fence extension back there.
We would pay someone to do the fencing, but not...
But not level. You'd have your guys with their equipment and everything level it. And,
yep. As much as we
can. Are you talking about just gravel, or are you going to pave it?
No, just gravel. Okay. Yeah.
Is it gravel right now back there?
The majority is gravel. We have some paving back there. In front of the salt shed, it's actually concrete because the trucks weigh so much when they dump that load. We needed some support.
Okay.
But the rest of it out there is gravel, and we would continue gravel.
Okay.
For the arborist study, depending on, we have to get some bids for that. If it's under $10,000, it wouldn't have to be a capital projects plan. It could be fit into the park maintenance.
We haven't. This has come up before, right?
Yeah.
Is this to fund the study?
Yes.
We have never done a study, correct?
We have not.
No.
And then they would just like GPS mark the trees and they'd analyze every kind of bigger tree in our park and everything.
That's right.
A replacement program as well.
Okay.
Yeah, and some years in the long term, once that plan's made, there'd be some years that would be pretty expensive, probably, and other years that would be pretty minor. So it could fall into the capital project.
I just know a couple of botanists that have looked at some of the trees down in like Heritage Park along the creek that are, say, they're fairly dangerous.
Were they horrified? I've heard.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've heard the same thing.
We had a hollow one removed. So
I know we've removed a few over the years, but
yeah,
we had one of the trees on Cedar Hills Drive that the fire trucks kept hitting, which was dangerous for the fire trucks, and so we actually removed that tree, and several others in Heritage Park as well. And we do the best we can, but we are not arborists, so we would like a long-term plan so that we know exactly which trees and when we're taking them out and how we're replacing them. So it's just another asset management portion of our assets in the city.
Because I also know, like 10 years ago, my ward planted about 4 trees in Heritage Park, and like 3 of them are dead, gone now. But, you know, I mean, there could be service projects that could come up for some of that stuff too, you know.
Yeah.
That's a good idea, actually.
And then if we could have if the arborist would give us a list of trees that would be best suited for our soils, that may be why some of those trees died, or the location of where they're placed makes a difference. We just want a comprehensive plan to do that. When Heritage Park was originally developed back in the late 90s, they looked at all of this, and the recommendation was to remove those trees at that time. But the problem was, it would take so long to replace them all.
And so
they left them there.
Yeah.
We haven't solved the problem. We still need to solve the problem.
And they're probably competing for water, too, when you plant new trees at the old trees. A little bit. If they're that big. Those are big trees. So.
Yes, they are.
So Heritage Park Amphitheater access, we would use our care tax revenues, if that's renewed, to help fund a lot of that.
On that topic, this is maybe more a question for David. Do we have a listing of what the care tax has gotten us as a city over the past years? Because we will want that for public information when the care tax comes up for renewal, to explain to residents what we've purchased with
it. It's pretty simple because we got so little at first.
Yeah, we have a list of all the projects we've
that'd be great.
Put funding towards.
I could tell you, the Heritage Park basketball court, quite a bit. This basement getting finished, and then funding for Bay Hill Park, and then also 2 years of the Arts Committee.
Mesquite Park bathroom.
And Mesquite Park bathroom.
Yeah. Yeah, it'd be great to get a financial account of that so we can explain to residents how useful that money has been.
Good point.
So those are all the projects.
Any questions for Cheryl?
Yes.
Fire
but just
away.
One, Cheryl, just one. on the 10B that you gave us, the list, it shows on bond financing proceeds increasing $1.6 million. What is that?
Yeah. I decided we should show this as a balance fund. So if we're going to show Deerfield Park on here, we have to show how we're going to fund that. And so it's always come up in the past, so I decided to add that line item.
So that's the balance of the what's
yeah, that's what we'd have to do.
What line number was that?
It is 40-99-105.
Yep, that's definitely something new. I can go into the motor pool fund real quick. For this last year, you can look at some of the disposals we've done the last few years, and the most recent are GMC Canyon for zoning and our Camry, and the average monthly costs on those. $72, $186. For this upcoming year, we have two half-ton trucks that we're replacing and one extended cab truck. And the thought was to get two extended cabs instead of kind of and one regular cab so that in when they have their summer part-time seasonal help, that they have a way to take those youth around easier without getting another vehicle. Also, the extended cabs actually really hold their value really well. If you look at the disposal of our last extended cab, we actually made money on it after 3 years. It was a negative $35 a month.
I got a question for you. So when will the fiscal year 2015 actuals be put into these schedules?
Which schedule?
I'm just looking at the right now. I'm looking
so
at the
2016 disposals. Those are the only ones that have been sold. So those are the ones I put in.
No, I'm looking at the preliminary budget for capital projects where it shows fiscal year 2013 actuals through 2015 actuals. Oh, wait. We've got the actual and the budget for 2015.
Yeah.
Never mind.
Yeah.
I didn't see that. The actuals were there already. Sorry about that.
Okay.
Perfect.
Is there any question on the motor pool? We've also have in there two fairway mowers as a purchase for this year. And so we've budgeted $86,000 for those, and that would be a and next time we do a budget presentation we'll talk more about the golf budget, but that would be a charge to the golf budget. Is there any other questions?
Thank you, Mr. Lowe. Appreciate you staying late and being here with us. Okay. We have number 11 now. We did talk about this in work session a little bit. Daniel, you want to hammer away at it a little bit more?
Sure. Let me start just by asking the rest of the council whether we have any particular sections that we went over where you'd like me to spend some more time or where you had some questions on it.
Inasmuch as the council just barely got your hard copy.
Yeah, I understand
In work session, then
it will, they'll be hard pressed to come up with ideas. I would almost suggest that the council read this through and start giving input very quickly.
One thing that seemed important to me was that we're defining congregate care.
I
thought it's probably important for us to all kind of read separately. And
I'm sorry, can you speak up?
I thought it's important that we all read that separately and just kind of see if there's any.
That's
not the definition.
Correct definition we're going to use. So okay. I'll get you an updated definition for that.
Okay. And legal would have to have a lot of say with that too.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure on that.
Getting legal review for everything we write is a very necessary step.
So is Mr. Shaw looking at this real time?
No, because I didn't want to waste his time as we made revisions. But we'll get him a draft of this that's more firm.
I'm happy to do whatever the council wishes.
I just know he's busy, and so I am very concerned about getting this done.
Yes,
and so,
me too.
Okay, well,
I didn't feel like this draft was in a good enough state yet to send to him, but I think the next one will be.
And Mayor, I will make whatever time is necessary to accomplish this.
Okay. I just know we have other things we're asking you to do as well, and so things that you said that you'd get us for next week, so I just know you got a lot on your plate. But this is important, and we have a deadline in about 2 weeks to get this done. So go ahead. Time's yours.
I honestly think our time is better spent saying, why don't we ask the council to read this week and give us some feedback. I don't know, even if I went through this in fine detail tonight, whether you'd be ready to give me some feedback. So
having said that, I strongly encourage the council. A lot of times I ask the council to give input, but many times it does not come. And so please read this document. Please give your input as quickly as you can so that we can get this document completed by the end of February and then start the process to get this absolutely approved, done by the 1st of May. Is that when our deadline is? 1st of May?
17th of May.
1st of May, Chandler? 17th of May. So that comes quickly. And so I don't want us to be at the very last minute trying to figure out language. I want to get it done well in advance of that deadline. So Mr. Zappala has made a recommendation that you guys all read it. I think that's a great idea. Give feedback. So unless you want to have some feedback now.
Let me just ask brief question as I was reading through it.
Go right ahead.
Just when I sat down here. So explain the lines on the under. So what's highlighted yellow versus what's red versus what's got a cross crossed out?
Text that's in red are changes that the Planning Commission added to this document when the Planning Commission
that's
reviewed
what
it.
That is, okay.
Strikeouts that are still in black are strikeouts the Planning Commission made as they edit it.
Okay.
Anything that's in yellow highlights are either strikeouts or additions that Jenny and I have made based on feedback from our retreat.
Are any of these from staff at all, or just you and Jenny?
At this point, it's me and Jenny going through other cities' code and copying and liberally editing what they have based on feedback we've had. But we definitely need to run it past
on those too, because
these guys, absolutely.
They are part of the Thursday night subcommittee along with David Driggs and myself to work through the language of this.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, this is an early draft. I wanted to get it to you now rather than waiting until I had a better draft. But this will be polished substantially in the next week.
So anything yellow that's crossed out is actually crossed out.
Yes.
Okay.
But I wanted to indicate that I crossed it out as opposed to the planning.
Anything yellow that isn't crossed out is either new.
Is brand new.
Is brand new. Okay.
Yep.
Okay. That explains a lot. Yep.
And then the blue one?
The one blue, if you wanted to chat about that briefly, this is on page 12. This is in a section called Conditions for Residential Uses. We're trying to specify very clearly what kind of residential can go in this zone because it's a commercial zone, and it's all on the second floor, no matter what, except in mixed use. And the mixed use zone, which is the portion directly across from the Charleston. It's about 8 acres, I believe. In that area, a developer could come in and say, well, I don't know that I'm going to get commercial uses on the southern portion of that, the part closest to the homes. And so maybe I want to take the density that you've granted me over that whole parcel and push it to be exclusively residential on the south side with then commercial on the north side. And so there's some conditions there under D that indicate how you would do that. C is saying, in that blue section, leading up to it, says allowed residential shall be 8 units per acre with no more than 4 units per building. Residential development shall be limited to a total parcel size of not more than 8 acres. And that blue section was added by Jenny. I'm not sure it's needed because we say later that you have to have 50% of the project shall be for commercial units. And so if that area is 8 acres, I think actually the residential portion is only 4 acres, not 8 acres, if we're saying 50%.
So what I was looking at when I added that, that actually comes from PGs. That's one of the restrictions that they have. And granted, they allow completely residential where we're saying no to that.
Yeah.
But one of the things that came up often that I heard from residents as they were coming to these meetings was just the concern of overall density in that area. And so restricting residential developments to not more than 8 acres of the total whatever that is.
So what you're getting at there is in that district, making sure that if we say 8 units per acre, a total of 8 acres, meaning total of 64 units, period, no matter what.
And I would say in those districts, yes.
Yes. So we ought to, I would say we should specify that as opposed to the acres. I think that would make it more clear what our intent is. But let me also say, those particular numbers are numbers I've inserted, and we need to talk about the specifics of those numbers and what the right numbers for density are. So actually, I forgot, Mayor, we probably should take a moment right here and look at the survey results.
Yeah, I was been looking at that.
That would help us
because
make sense.
I'm actually surprised. Are you still getting any, or are we done?
We have 717. They were nearly all in the first 24 hours. And then they petered in over the next few days, and I'll probably close it out tomorrow. I think we got like another 10 results today. They're very slowly coming in. In your Dropbox folder, you should have the survey. It's called Survey Results. So I'll give you a moment to locate that and open it up, and then we can walk through what those results say. The very, very first page is indicating which precincts people were from. And one of the concerns was that if we open up the survey, then the folks who live right close to the commercial area will get everybody on board and take the survey and kind of counterbalance those results. And that didn't happen.
They were released?
We asked for where they lived, and the biggest was from Precinct 3. And I believe the ones that are right close to it, are they Precinct
5 and 1?
Five? Is that right?
No.
No, it's two.
Two and one.
Two and one.
So you could almost combine two and one. It's almost.
Maybe,
yeah.
So you're talking out of the 700 results, those two accounted for maybe 250. So lots of representation from throughout our city. And wow, Cedar Hills 3 really came through, which is the Cedars, so
yeah,
good for them.
Too.
Yeah. Question two is asking which of the following uses should be allowed in the area of the commercial zone. And if you just take a look at the height of those bars, nearly everybody, well over 600, were like, yeah, we'd love sit-down restaurants. Specialty retail was over 500. City-owned recreation was a little bit over 400. Fast food was around 450. Then we get to around 350 with private recreation, which I think I indicated would be like splash pads or something like that.
Sorry,
and of course,
I'm reading some of the comments.
Yes, those are funny. Car wash is around 300. Offices were around 300, which really surprised me. I don't think we should have offices in the commercial area, in that part of the commercial area. Hardware stores around 300, drug stores 300. The ones that are really low is used or new car lot. And auto repair shops, superstore was actually kind of low. That is around 200 out of the 700, so most people did not want that kind of use there. If you look at the others, there's people who say Trader Joe's, one person who said cemetery, a number that said, I thought there were some that said library. Yes, there are a number here that say library. Some that say semi-fast foods. They're looking for Cafe Rio. I think everybody would like that. And a number, some which might have been humorous as you look through there. Some saying anything but more dentist office, no apartments, no residential, and so on.
I'm surprised at how many say no to any residential living on the second story.
Oh, we're not even there yet.
I'm sorry.
That's the next question. So well, that's not even the next question. Question three was really getting at what is the vision of the commercial district. Should it be open to all types of retail, including big box stores and so on? Or should it be smaller shops and stores to preserve our small town feel? And the latter ones win.
That doesn't surprise me.
375 to 200.
I'm not surprised at all.
That's what I've heard over and over.
I'm kind of surprised with the amount that said anything, though. I thought that would be lower.
Huh? Question four is, should it allow should this area of the commercial zone allow residential living on the second story? And quite a few no's, over 300, around 200 yeses, and then a bunch of maybes. It's not too surprising there'd be some people say maybe, it depends on how big it is. So I think we have to think really carefully about whether we want any residential in the neighborhood retail section.
Yeah.
Question five is, if there is residential, should it be restricted to assisted living and 55 plus older housing? And that was overwhelmingly no. Question six.
I'm totally surprised with that, because I think that's, people are misinformed. Because one of the things we've heard over and over here during public comment was, if we allow any residential, it's going to overwhelm our schools.
Yes.
And the 55 and older would never overwhelm our schools.
Yes.
And so I'm very, very surprised.
But I think there's obviously, that's backlash from the proposed development.
Well, and I think if you look at the comments, people are saying no more, you shouldn't allow any more assisted living or senior.
Yes. Yes. Question six is, how many units would be acceptable? And the zero had the most votes, around 275, 25 to 50, around 225. I was surprised there were some people who said 200 to 500, but there were some. So that seems like we should either say no, or or it should be very limited residential uses in that area. Now, question seven and eight are about a totally different area.
The mixed use area. I read that differently than you do.
Oh, go right ahead. You're reading that as adding up all the people who say there should be some.
And I'm saying the overwhelming people say there should be some residential in there. They overwhelm the no's.
Yes. So you could add up 225 plus 125 to be 350 plus another 400, maybe 425 that say there should be some.
Versus 250.
Versus 250 to say there should be none.
The bulk majority say they still should be residential in there.
Yeah, that surprises me.
Yeah. I'm a little surprised too, actually.
And then question seven is referring to the mixed-use area. Same
again,
question.
It's the same situation.
Same sentiment. Don't restrict it to only 55 and older. And then the numbers do shift on what kind of residential, whether residential should be there and how much. And they're the 25 to 51.
This
but
is
again, if
retail?
No, this is mixed.
This is mixed. Okay.
Yeah, the question eight is mixed use. And so there, if you add them up, all but 200, we're saying some kind of residential, which leaves around 500 saying, yes, you should have some amount, with 300 of those saying it should be small. So you could also add the 300 and the zeros and say there's 500 people that say 0 to 50.
That's good feedback.
Yep. Interesting.
Daniel, thanks for all your hard work.
Yeah,
okay.
That's
sure.
I will take. Pretty impressive, actually. But.
We will keep plugging away at this. I think that's it, ladies and gentlemen. I'll take a motion to adjourn.
I motion to adjourn.
Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Mr. Geddes. Is all those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Motion was unanimous. Thank you very much. We're done.